Clinton will make an outstanding president, and I am proud to stand with her today.
Race relations have improved dramatically in my lifetime. Those who deny it are dishonoring the struggle that helped us achieve that progress.
She obviously has a big job to do in terms of uniting the country, and as you say before that, uniting the party. And that's why we're looking for these key appointments, the role of Brexit czar and the role of Chancellor. We're looking for those key appointments to come pretty quickly, possibly as early as this evening.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and today is Wednesday. It's July 13th, 2016. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell as we join you this morning from Chicago, where it is another hot, humid day, threat of some severe weather possibly later on today. During this broadcast, we will take you to New York. We'll also take you to London to say goodbye to David Cameron. Moving vans are in front of 10 Downing Street. We'll talk to a reporter about the change of power in Great Britain, our close ally, and we will all do that after we check the markets this morning, the market intel from the WGN Market Desk. You heard Vic go through some of the numbers. Most of the arrows are pointing up today. It's been a pretty decent night, all things considered, around the world. In Japan, the Nikkei was up almost 1%. In Europe, in London especially, where the change of power happening, the stocks there up too, but just a little bit here in the United States. Dow futures are higher this morning. We have just a few economic reports coming out a little later on today. The Federal Reserve will give its latest assessment of economic conditions in the U.S. The Beige Book comes out also later today. The Treasury's federal budget will be released. A couple of quarterly earnings reports round out the day. Economic and business news. CSX, the railroad company, Yum Brands, also reporting. They will do that after the market closes later on today. There has been another. A Tesla Model X crashed while in autopilot mode over the weekend in Montana, but the owner says he would buy another Tesla. The owner, who would not identify himself by name, is now the third to crash a Tesla Model X while in autopilot. The first was a man in Florida who was beta testing one of the vehicles. He crashed, was actually decapitated in a crash because he ran under a semi-truck. He was the first fatal accident so far involving the Tesla Model X. Yesterday, last night in New York City, a series of professors got together, including one from the from UMass Amherst, who's presented new scientific findings to an international conference of artificial intelligence experts in robotics. And he is going to talk to us in a moment. But believe it or not, the guy in Florida who was test driving the Tesla was actually rolling video on it. He had been posting to YouTube on several occasions about his experiences with this vehicle. Let's listen to one of those conversations that he was having while he was test driving this car in Florida.
Here we are, stop and go traffic on 271, and car's doing it all itself.
What am I gonna do with my hands down here? It takes all the stress out of it. Tell you what, it's like, get to your destination slightly slower, but hey, at least now you don't have to worry about anything. It's just let it go.
That was Joshua Brown, who was killed in a fatal accident in Florida. Professor Shlomo Silberstein is computer science and associate dean of research and engagement at UMass Amherst and presented findings last night. We have him exclusively this morning, his first interview since presenting some of these findings. Professor, first, via Skype, thank you for being with us this morning. Tell us first what it is that your research focuses on and why we should be concerned.
There is a growing recognition that it's easier to build autonomous systems that are going to be deployed in a restricted environment. You can think about an elevator. Elevator used to have drivers, but now we can make them fully autonomous and very highly efficient. But they operate in an environment that has a lot of restrictions. They have their own paths, they're protected, there are buttons and so on. The real world is a lot more complicated. And if you start thinking about it, we don't have a lot of examples of fully autonomous systems in the real world, meaning coping with the full challenge of an uncertainty associated with an unrestricted environment. You can argue that trains may be a bit easier than cars because they have a more restricted world and the world yields to them. And when they approach an intersection, everything closes and so on. So, but with cars, things are getting closer and closer to dealing with the full complexity of the real world where anything can happen. And so that's where AI is trying to get. And there are many challenges, as you know, and there's been also a lot of progress, so it's a very exciting area.
One of those challenges is, as you describe and as you've been focusing on, is this challenge of transferring control between the human and the autonomous system. So in this case, we'd say between the person driving the car and the car. Talk to me a little bit about that.
That's right. So I am a great believer that in many areas, collaboration between people and machines will produce the optimal outcomes. And it will be a while before, in some really complex domains, we will be able to deploy fully autonomous systems that need no human supervision over their lifetime or over some extended period of time, maybe even a day or end-to-end kind of accomplishing a goal and so on. We're not quite there, but we can accomplish quite a lot with little human supervision. So a lot of the work that I'm doing is designed to enable people to participate in the process, but disengage and re-engage in an orchestrated way. And one of the problems is that when people disengage, getting them to re-engage could be hard. The outcome is not assured that they will, in fact, do what you expect them to do at the right time. And all these uncertainties must be accounted for.
We're having a conversation this morning on our opening bell program from New York on Skype with Professor Shlomo Zilberstein of UMass Amherst, who presented findings last night to a conference there, an artificial intelligence conference.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones and the Standard & Poor's Index both reached new all-time highs yesterday. The Dow closing at 18,347, the S&P adding 15 points. The NASDAQ also had a good Tuesday, climbing 34 points to close at 50.22. Stocks continue to ride a wave of momentum after a better-than-expected jobs report on Friday. Federal safety investigators are asking Tesla Motors for details on how its autopilot system works and why it failed to detect a tractor-trailer involved in a crash that killed the driver in May. With or without action from Congress, J.P. Morgan Chase is raising the company's minimum pay for thousands of employees, including bank tellers and customer service reps. Bottom-end wages will rise from $10.15 an hour to $16.50 over the next 3 years. The pay raise comes just in time for this. Starbucks has increased prices on brewed coffee, espresso, and tea beverages at its company-run stores. Brewed coffee is jumping 10 to 20 cents. Espresso and tea latte beverages up to 30 cents. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning talking with Professor Shlomo Zilberstein of Amherst University about research findings that he presented yesterday at the Artificial Intelligence Conference in New York, specifically about Tesla. And Professor, I want to go back to something you said in our first segment, and that is you don't think we are there yet. But as I hear you say about this technology that we're not there yet, I see Tesla with vehicles on the road, actively testing these vehicles. There seems to be a disconnect there.
Yes, I think that, and I really don't want to make comments that are too specific to that case, but broadly considering the challenges involved and what may happen, it's not like we have a problem of developing a cooperative process. And if I will develop it in my lab tomorrow, let's say we come up with a planning approach that solves that in a really good way, and we will put it in a car and that will be the end of it. Actually, significant training will have to take place, and people, whatever you will tell them, and whatever will be in the manual, and whatever warning you will give them, people always like to push the limits, and they will develop in their own mind a certain model of what the system can do and cannot do for them. And that's a very risky thing when you deal with new technology, where what it can do and cannot do and its boundaries is unpredictable. Now, people learn very quickly. It's one of our traits. You know, the AlphaGo program that was used recently to beat the world, one of the world top players, it learned by playing a lot of games. 30 million games were used to train it against itself, plus lots of other knowledge. People can learn from one or two examples, and they immediately generalize. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And a person can get a sense of confidence in the system after using it for an hour, because in a couple of cases in a row, it did just what it wanted. But maybe the system doesn't have the ability to do it reliably, and in fact, the manufacturer told you not to rely on it doing it and to monitor it. So that's one of the problems, that deploying these technologies needs to go with some training, and ultimately, we don't even know what kind of training needs to be done. We have developed a lot of experience with how to train people to drive manually. It took many years to do that, and different kind of training will be necessary. One of the articles in the Wall Street Journal a year ago, I think, was talking about how automation could make us dumb if we deploy it in a way that is not careful. If we don't drive much because our car is very sophisticated, we may become less competent drivers. So there are risks involved. And of course, if the car never relies on us, that's okay. But what if the car needs us, but just a couple of times a week for a few minutes? Then you may find out that that kind of a model doesn't work for people, and there has to be more training of the transfer of control, maybe in simulation. Maybe the car needs to activate it even when it's not really necessary, so that the person get used to the fact that the car needs help every once in a while. We don't have a lot of experience with exactly how to deploy it. So the technology is advancing very quickly. It has limitations, and it will continue to have limitations and risks over, you know, the foreseeable future. And how to get people to use that technology, people that are non-experts, is a very important question.
I don't want to make this about Tesla either, but I want to ask another question about this. And that is, you know, Tesla is really the only car company that is beta testing this. The other car makers who are working with this have not been doing that. Is that, beta testing seems like something we do with software, not with our lives in a very heavy vehicle.
You know, I felt the same way, that it's a really new concept of beta testing, something that you really trust your life with, as opposed to something that when it fails, it's just a little frustrating. So it does raise some questions. At the same time, I think that fundamentally it's very important that people have the sense that a deep sense that this technology is being deployed and needs supervision all the time. Now, the vision of autonomous driving is, of course, not such that the car will need supervision, full supervision all the time. In fact, it could be nerve-wracking to drive a car that needs supervision 100% of the time, but it does it for you. Ultimately, it will evolve to the point where it will be able to develop confidence and to know to ask for the driver's attention when it feels that there might be a need for it. But right now, it really needs to be 100% of the time, and that's that could enable this kind of beta testing, where it goes hand in hand with monitoring of the technology, learning it, and paying even more attention than you would pay when you drive manually.
That's Professor Silverstein, Shlomo Zilberstein from UMass Amherst with us on Skype this morning from New York City, where he presented his findings, research findings at the International Joint Conference on International Artificial Intelligence in New York City. The National Traffic Highway Safety Administration, the National Transportation Safety Board, both are investigating Tesla. Tesla, again, by the way, the only automaker out of all of them with automated cars on the roads now, is the only car maker beta testing on the roads right now. Other experts have been very critical of Tesla for doing that.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:39. Welcome back to the program. In London today, it is a change of power. David Cameron steps down after 6 years as Britain's Prime Minister. He'll be handing over the reins to Home Secretary Theresa May, who was chosen as Conservative chief after her main opponent dropped out. Cameron announced his resignation after British voters decided to leave the European Union. This is his comments from earlier this week.
I'm also delighted that Theresa May will be the next Prime Minister. She is strong, she is competent, she's more than able to provide the leadership that our country is going to need in the years ahead, and she will have my full support. Obviously, with these changes, we now don't need to have a prolonged period of transition.
Let's go live to London, and freelance journalist Angela Dewan is with us this morning. Good morning, Angela, and welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
I've been reading your reporting on this. It always surprises me, the change of power in the UK, especially Great Britain. It seems to happen very quickly, but there is a little bit of pomp and circumstance, it seems, to it. Tell us what's happening right now.
Well, basically, that's right. In Britain, we have a parliamentary system here that the Prime Minister is not directly elected. So, you know, you can wake up one day and have a completely new leader and have had no say in it at all. Basically, Britain went to the polls on June 23 and voted to leave the European Union. That's a 28-country bloc that makes it part of this region. And as a fallout, the Prime Minister, David Cameron, decided to resign. He was campaigning to keep the country in the European Union, and having failed to do so, he said he would step down. Now, that's given way to a long-winded leadership contest, which involved putting candidates forward, voting them down to whittle them down to just two candidates, and just on Monday, the only other rival left, Andrea Leadsom, stepped down. So Theresa May has basically become Prime Minister in a process of elimination.
So today, I know there were moving vans outside of 10 Downing Street earlier. The Prime Minister, David Cameron, he will go to the castle. He'll go to see the Queen and resign. Has he already done that?
He hasn't, I believe. He's taking his last Prime Minister's questions today, which is, you know, a question session in Parliament where anyone in Parliament can get up and put anything to him. It's quite a theatrical thing that moves very quickly in Britain. And his plan is to go to the palace and offer his official resignation to the Queen. He did say on Monday that Theresa May would be sitting in the Prime Minister's office by Wednesday evening.
Tell us about Theresa May. What kind of leader will she be? What are her policies? What can we look forward to?
I think she was the best person running for this job. It was quite a funny situation. It started out with like an episode of Game of Thrones. I thought everyone wanted the job. The former London Mayor Boris Johnson was the favourite, and he pulled out. And once he pulled out, everybody seemed to not want this job. So Theresa May was the one who really wanted it. She had her heart in it, and I think she was probably the most natural of all five that put themselves forward. She's tough. She knows what she wants. She's been called uncompromising, both as a compliment and a criticism. I think it's probably what will make her a good leader, because Prime Minister Cameron tried so hard to compromise and keep everyone in his party happy. Theresa May is a different style. She says, this is who I am. This is how things are going to be. And if you follow me, we can talk about what you want later. So I think she's going to be tough. And her first job will be to start negotiating a divorce process from the European Union. And she's made clear that she's not going to be soft in those negotiations.
Should we read anything into the fact that everybody went running for the doors when this came open and she was the only person left standing? All of the others who were campaigning for Brexit seemed to really run for the doors.
I think so, and I think it is a bad sign. Certainly, the big obvious one was the far-right UKIP party leader, Nigel Farage, who has been campaigning for Britain to leave the EU for a good 17 years, and as soon as he had his moment of glory, he stepped down. I think everyone recognises that this is one of the messiest jobs that the British Prime Minister is going to have to do, and I think a lot of people who campaigned to leave the EU realised that they couldn't make good on their promises, and I think that they don't want to really be in the firing line if things go badly.
I love the commentators in the UK who really pull no punches in talking about this. I heard one of them on Sky News say that Nigel Farage was sort of like the person who sank the Titanic and then was the first off the ship.
That's not a bad description. I think that's very true, and there's been a lot of anger that's what he did. Some people thought that the Prime Minister also shouldn't be stepping down in one of the country's most turbulent times. But I think what Theresa May is showing is that she does have the ability to unite the party, possibly to unite the country in a very divisive time. So I think that she will have quite a lot of support going into these negotiations and leading the country at least over the next few months.
It is 2016, and Ms. May will become Britain's second female prime minister, the first in 26 years. She joins a very small club.
She does indeed, and she has quite a good record on women. She's kind of been part of restructuring things in the party to encourage more female MPs, also ethnic minority representation in Parliament. So she does have a good record on women progressing in the country. She certainly did have a better record than Andrea Leadsom, which was her last rival, who pulled out on Monday, the energy minister, who basically said that she didn't believe small businesses should have to pay parental leave and was a little bit soft on gender issues.
Do we have any sense of her interaction with the U.S., with President Obama, or any of the politics here? Is it too soon for that?
I think it's a bit soon. Theresa May is incredibly focused on what's going on in Britain and its relationship with Europe at the moment. But I think, the U.K. and the U.S. have been close allies for a very long time, and there's no reason that will change because Britain's relationship with Europe is changing. President Obama made clear when he was here he wanted Britain in the EU, but I don't think Britain leaving will have any impact on that relationship. I can imagine Theresa May and President Obama getting on very well, being able to sit around a table and negotiate new deals if necessary. I imagine any change in the US-UK relationship would have more to do with who the US votes in at the end of the year.
I can't let you go without asking you about Larry, the cat. Is he staying or going?
I believe he's staying, and I believe that is one thing on Theresa May's to-do list. She has to become a good friend of Larry the cat if she has any chance of life being good for her in 10 Downing Street.
We should tell people Larry is the cat that sort of has taken up residence at 10 Downing Street. For how long now has he been there?
I'm not really sure, to be honest, but I believe he's made himself very comfortable over the years.
I've seen a lot of him walking around the grounds there this morning, probably more than I have seen David Cameron this morning.
he's more comfortable in his position, I imagine.
All right. Good of you to join us. It's always interesting to see how the change of power happens in Great Britain. Angela Dewan, a freelance journalist in London, good of you to be with us on the opening bell. Hopefully we can chat with you again sometime.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Well, you can follow her on Twitter at @bylangela, L-A-N-G-E-L-A. Again, it's Angela Dewan, freelance journalist and digital producer for CNN in London.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:51. Welcome back to the opening bell program for this Wednesday on the WGN Market Desk today. Dow futures are higher by about 12 points. S&P NASDAQ futures higher as well. Most of the world markets generally higher. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, back on June 30th, a surprise from the government in the Planet Acreage report. Yesterday, a surprise in the report for the month of July showing corn stocks smaller than expected thanks to strong exports. The old crop corn stocks at 2,081,000,000 bushels. That's below expectations. And the per acre yield for corn at 168 bushels. Looking at soybeans, per acre yield at 46.7, soybean production at 3,880,000,000 bushels, and old crop U.S. soybean stocks at 350,000,000 bushels. So at the end of the day, we had a pretty good jump in those soybean prices and in corn prices at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The nearby corn contract ended the day up 6.5 cents. Nearby soybeans up 24.25. But once again, cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange traded lower, sinking to a 5-year low for the second straight session. The August contract traded 45 cents lower at $108.90 a hundredweight. And lean hogs didn't do much better yesterday. We saw the nearby July contract up 40 cents, but the October lean hog contract down 32 cents a hundredweight. But again, another surprise from the USDA. Now we look forward to the August crop report. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you have a good day as well. We want to keep you up to date on a couple of other big stories happening in the world of business this morning. The first of those comes from Takata again, an expanded recall. And now the city of Houston is reminding car owners to check to see if their cars have those recalled Takata airbags. Death from shrapnel in those airbag incidents has led to the biggest recall in U.S. history. Houston's launched an initiative to get owners to get their cars in and get them taken care of. Administrator for the National Transportation Safety Administration, Georgia Chicken, says they are prioritizing the most dangerous cases.
We are working to get the most serious vehicles' airbag inflators replaced first.
There's also more today on a security flaw in the Pokemon Go app. It's raised concerns now about users' privacy. Security experts, we told you yesterday, noticed the app requires users to allow broad access to Google accounts. That could potentially allow game developer Niantic to use Google search histories, Google Drive documents, Gmail messages, other stuff. We also told you about some issues in terms of malware. Meanwhile, tech and lifestyle expert Jonathan Rubini says there is a way to protect your data from apps that request that kind of access.
Create a separate Google account that you just use to install apps or do any other gaming or any other application on Facebook, so that it's not necessarily connected to your primary account.
Some of the big stories today in the world of business.